I'm Greg Carter. Welcome to USAWatchdog.com. We're the special guest. We haven't had an on in a while. I can't have him on enough. He's a brilliant guy. He's a PhD in infectious diseases. I hope I'm getting that right. He also is co-founder of PeakProsperity.com, along with Adam Taggart, who I don't interview, but man, he's a brilliant guy. I just want to say that. Adam Taggart's a brilliant guy, and you have bigger name recognition, so he always says, let's go with Chris. And so, anyway, Chris Martinson, thanks for joining us today on USAWatchdog.com.
Thanks, Greg. Always a pleasure to be here with you, all your followers and listeners. It's a mess, right? But beyond just the deaths, though, I think there's too much focus on just the mortality. So a lot of what I'm covering for people is that this is a novel coronavirus. Personal opinion, you force me to put money on the table. I'm putting it on. This came out of a lab. It was a gain-of-function experiment that went bad. Maybe it escaped. Maybe somebody released it. I won't speculate. But I will tell you that based on the genetics of this thing, it looks like somebody was fiddling around with viruses, okay? And because of that, here's the most critical thing people need to know. This is unlike any other virus we've seen. And here's one critical way. Most viruses have a single way to get into a single type of cells. So when you get an influenza, an H1N1, for instance, or something like that, it's coming into your airway cells because it has a key that allows it to jimmy a lock and get into some of your cells, right? SARS-CoV-2 doesn't have one set of keys. It has at least three sets of keys. It's breaking in through the ACE2 receptor. That gets it into your nose. That's why people lose that sense of smell, possibly. It's coming in through your lungs, all that other stuff, right? It also can get in through a receptor called CD147, which means it's getting into your white blood cells directly. And we don't know what kind of mayhem is being caused by that, still being unraveled. It also gets in through something called the neuropilin 1 receptor, which means possibly as well it's also getting into the neural tissue directly. So this is unlike anything we've seen. The second thing is that we are now finding out that people who had mild cases, right, treated at home, never went to the hospital, a lot of them are now showing up and we're seeing that they have abnormal lung scans, they have abnormal heart scans, some of them have long-lasting kidney damage. Some of them have certain neurological things that we don't know if it's permanent. We don't know yet, too novel. But I will tell you this, that people are, if to the extent anybody's saying, well, most people, you know, nothing happens to them. That's not the case, Greg. A lot of people are, too many, are showing up with what we think might be, and I hate to put it this way, but it could be lifelong impairment of heart function, lung function, kidney function, brain function. So when you have those four, you know, big major organs being assaulted like that, this is unlike any virus we faced before. I think that adds to the, hey, this came out of a lab sort of a story because, you know, no other species we know about has this virus attack its cells as aggressively as it does humans. It's called, there's a binding affinity. So this virus has a higher binding affinity for human cells than for any other species out there. Hard to imagine how that came out naturally, right? To give one example, SARS, classic SARS, the first one that came out in 2003, it has a binding affinity for human ACE2 receptors that's 1,000 times lower than that of SARS-CoV-2. This one we're dealing with, it leads to COVID-19.
COVID-19.
So when we look at all of that, I just want people to be cautious in saying, you can't compare this to other viruses. Until we know more, it's perfectly appropriate for people to say, maybe I'm rationalizing, but here's my view. I don't want this thing. Until we learn more, until we have more effective treatments, until the pharma industry releases its chokehold from all these other effective treatments that may or may not work, but we got to get the right test done. Until I see a really effective vaccine that's gone through proper testing, and by the way, a lot of other people have already taken it before me. I want to see really big, robust trials. Before we get to any of that stuff, I'm going to say the wisest course of action is to not get it in the first place, right? And so hundreds and thousands of stories out there of young people, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, lives either shortened or really distressed and damaged by exposure to this. And we don't know why. Some people, it just doesn't really affect at all. Others, it really wallops. We're learning more all the time. But that's the message I've been trying to get to people is what's the data? What's the science? What do we know? What do we not know? And by the way, just to toot my own horn, I don't know of, there's only a few channels out there besides mine, all of them not in mainstream media, that are going into this level of detail because people need to know that. So you can decide for yourself, I'll take that risk. I won't take that risk, right? But the media has done a really horrible job all the way
through. Lied. nowhere worse than hydroxychloroquine. First of all, does hydroxychloroquine work early on? I mean, you have Dr. Zelensky's treated 2,200 patients. You've had Didier Raoul in France, who's got a 1,000-person study, probably bigger than that now. It's 90-something percent, 92, 97, 99. I mean, it's if you take it early. Does hydroxychloroquine work, and does the science point to it working? You are a PhD. You are a scientist in part. Does it work, hydroxychloroquine and zinc and ZPAC?
Well, by the way, we should be able to answer that extremely definitively, yes or no, today, based on having just a few things we needed to have. And I first put out the study design protocol that I thought we should see back in April. April 27th, I think, was the video I did this in, where I said, hey, this is easy. Randomized, double-blind, controlled study with hydroxychloroquine, giving reasonable doses, plus zinc. You got to have the zinc in there. And then plus or minus azithromycin, just to parse it all out. But otherwise, just put it in there. If you think, who cares? We just want to see if this works or not. We could have had that data months ago, and we don't have it. And the reason we don't have it is we have all these studies that have come out, Greg, that were designed to fail, right? Hydroxychloroquine is an antiviral. When you take Tamiflu, read the package on Tamiflu, right? It says, must be taken within 48 hours of exposure. After that, doesn't really help, right? Why? Because the antiviral stops the virus from replicating. That's, you know, after it's already fully replicated and then you administer it, of course it doesn't do any good. That would be like administering an airbag to a patient after they've crashed their car. Like, probably doesn't help, might even hurt, right? That's what all these big trials have done. The recovery trial in the UK.
Oh, that's awful.
They administer toxic doses of hydroxychloroquine after they're already in serious condition. It's designed to fail. And by the way, if that isn't mass murder or something equivalent, I mean, it's really that grotesque, right? Of the studies we've seen where they give it to people early, in almost all cases, I noticed that there's a strong, the data says this works, right? So, you know, and you see these studies, even like we had a positive study out of the United States, which came out of Detroit, right? The Henry Ford Center said, wow, it cuts death in half if we administer hydroxychloroquine plus azithromycin. Little muddied because they also had a steroid mixed in there, so it's kind of hard to peer through. But doctors are trying to help people, so I won't fault them at all for that, you know. But still, they said it cut it in half from 26 to 13%. But geez, you compare that to what Didier Raoult's coming up with, which has the same numbers as Lenko is coming up with. They're having death rates of 0.5%, huh. Right? You know, so
they have zinc in theirs.
Should we feel great about the 13%? By the way, that atrocious UK study had death rates as high as 40%, and they sort of settled out around 28%. Just by Didier Raoult's or Zelenko's standards, atrocious results, right? And then they're all like, oh, but we give some dexamethasone, we can get that all the way down to only 20% rate of death. Like, this is horrifying. And the media has been absolutely complicit in being really excited about all the latest pharma stuff. You know, any little wiggle around a vaccine, especially the remdesivir trials, they were like really kid gloves, you know, whooping it up, you know. But if you're looking at stuff like ivermectin, if you're looking at stuff like hydroxychloroquine or a protocol I'm super excited by called the MATH Plus protocol, and the MATH all stand for different things, but heparin is the H in that, which means this is a clotting disorder. So the doctor's like, let's treat the clots then. Great idea, and it works really well. And they're giving methylprednisone in there and all that stuff, right? So it's really, it works. They have really great successes. So here's the part that's been disturbing to me, Greg. We have these things that work. We know that they work based on the results we've gotten. Why aren't we having some national thing where we go in and we go, then let's find out if they really do work. Let's go to the MATH Plus protocol doctors. Let's go to the Zelenkos. Let's find out what they have, and let's take what they think they found and put it through whatever rigor we feel we need to in order to really know for sure. Nope, that's not been happening. What we're finding instead is the stuff is either ignored or is trashed in the media, and that's been going on. And it's again, this is fourth turning stuff, because all of a sudden, Greg, I'm a scientist. I love my science. I have never been more disappointed in fact, I come from a medical science background. I've never been more disappointed in science than I have been at this point in life. And I'm in love with science. I don't like being in this position, right? But we saw fraudulent data. We had that Surgisphere fraud, which most people don't know about, but it was that big trial that caused the WHO to pull hydroxychloroquine and all these studies to get shit canned. Sorry for my language here, but it was based on obviously, clearly, purely fraudulent data.
There
was
Lancet no study, same thing, fraudulent data.
There was no possible way for this tiny company out of a house in Chicago to have data feed access to 691 hospitals. Everybody should have known that. The Lancet editors should have known that. I knew that. How did I know that? How does Lancet not know that, right? But they ran it anyway. And then knowing full well they were going to have to retract it later on, and of course they did, and you know, brought great shame upon themselves and their publication, but the damage had been done. And that's what they were there to do, was to put to damage the idea of hydroxychloroquine. Remember, that was...
And let me get this clearly. Hydroxychloroquine, zinc, early on, your opinion, as a scientist, works, right? All these studies with the Didier, you call it, I say Raoul, is Raoul?
I'm just thinking.
The guy in France. And also all these other 2,200 people with Dr. Zelensky. All this stuff, all this data, there's also I think the Association of Physicians also came out, multiple countries. Yeah. So hydroxychloroquine and zinc works, no question, early on. Is that your statement?
That's the data I see, but here's the easiest way to think about this. It's a really safe compound. We've been given tens of millions of doses per year for 70 years. Billions of doses have been recorded. 3 years ago, when the WHO did a big retrospective study, they said, how many people can we point to that definitively died from a heart failure because they were on this thing? And the answer was zero.
Oh, that's
right?
Evil.
Yeah.
I mean, the press, by what they're doing, I mean, they got blood on their hands. I mean, they basically come out and said it doesn't work. CNN has come out and said it doesn't work.
Right.
It's awful.
But here's the thing. It's exceedingly safe. And so the downside is zero, but it might provide some benefit. So it has at least some upside. And by the way, they're like, oh, but it could be risky. I'm like, what's riskier than dying on a vent because your lungs shut down? That feels pretty risky to me. I don't know, right?
Yeah.
So to me, if there's literally no downside, but there's plenty of possible upside, including not dying, why wouldn't you do that? Same thing for ivermectin. Same thing for, there's a whole variety of things out there, like this whole idea of methylprednisone. Super cheap, off patent, 10 cents a pill kind of stuff. And we ought to be trumpeting that because, Greg, we get back to work. We get our country back. We get to dispense with all this crazy Orwellian stuff that's happening as soon as we get an effective treatment out there. So what should be happening, if the CDC was going to do anything useful at all, they would say, our job is to go out and collate and collect all this data, find the little hot spots where things seem to be working, dive in, hold that data, pull it out, and then share it as widely as possible as soon as we find out it's working. Instead, we see that these doctors out of the Eastern Virginia Medical Establishment, they came up with this Math Plus protocol, and they're working as hard as they can to publicize that, but they're also treating patients. Why is that up to them? What, if you're gonna have a national apparatus that's allegedly about health, they should be out finding what improves health the most, and the doctor should be doctoring, and we have these big, hugely funded national entities like the CDC that ought to be out gathering that data and sharing it, right? That's how I think that ought to be set up, right? If I were in charge, right? This is how it would happen. But we're not seeing that. And by the way, the press does, I think, have blood on its hands at this point for failing to take a neutral position on this stuff. Pull in people, if you don't have the expertise as journalists, pull somebody in who can explain it to you. This is a good trial. Here's why. This is a bad trial. Here's why. Here's what we can say. Here's what we can't say. And help that collating process and help share the stuff that really works. And, you know, as much like right now, I bet you today.
They've been trashing it. I mean, it's awful. They've been trashing it. And the CDC has been giving them cover, Dr. Fauci. I mean, it's just awful. I mean, what they're doing is, I mean, they're lying about the numbers. I mean, they just had all the numbers taken away from them by the White House, which should have happened a long time ago. I mean, are the people that a taxpayer has paid to help them, the Centers for Disease Control, are a bunch of weasels that want people to die?
Who knows what their motivation is, but
well, people, look, for what they're doing, people are dying.
Yes.
But listen, I just wanted to start with whether the article you wrote was, I mean, you're not a doomsday guy. You're about peak prosperity. Mm-hmm. You're about making it, man. You're about beating the system, and here's what you got to do. And you've gotten tons of brilliant work on your website, peakprosperity.com. We'll talk about it at the end of the interview. But you wrote a piece called Brace for Impact. And let's just start with why. Why have you written a piece less than a week ago, Brace for Impact? Why?
Because, Greg, we're not doing anything other than steering towards a cliff edge here at this point in time. So we had the 2008 great financial crisis. We should have learned a couple lessons. We didn't learn some lessons there. In fact, we just enshrined those lessons into something that I think is going to really bite us. And so the Federal Reserve, the plunge protection team, all the organs of state are all geared towards one thing only, and that's giving more money to rich people. So I believe we're in the fourth turning. I believe Neil Howe's and Strauss's thesis that you have these various generational turnings, that the one of the hallmarks of the fourth turning is loss of faith in institutions. Well, the Federal Reserve is still held up by a lot of people as a sort of benevolent thing. They care about unemployment. They care about inflation. You know, they care about things like that. And none of that's true. What they care about is shoveling and funneling big profits to big banks. So there's the Federal Reserve deserves to lose every bit of respect anybody's ever held for it. And that loss of faith will be pretty damning. But we still have Sallie Mae offering loans to students, the young, the future of America, for 1,200 basis points over, you know, what they can get it for. It's a racket. We see that you can't trust the CDC anymore. You can't trust the WHO if you ever could. You can't trust all these major institutions are failing us, but none more comprehensively than the Federal Reserve. The impact I want people to brace for, Greg, is the idea that they're just going to run this magic money printer until something breaks. I see that breaking in the next year or two at the latest at this point in time. So I want people to be ready for that. You know, what have I done? I have cows and chickens and a garden right now. I mean, that's the kind of bracing I'm talking about.
Yeah. We were talking about this in the pre-interview, and that was the Goldman. I even brought it up in my weekly news wrap-up. Goldman Sachs had an obscene profit quarter. I mean, obscene profits in the second quarter. Obscene. I mean, yeah. And then you have rich people like, you know, a millionaires for taxes or whatever it is. I mean, taxes. And how about we just stop all the bailouts? Forget a few billion dollars in taxes. You got trillions in bailouts, you incompetent boobs. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about not somebody, you know, a husband and wife making $150,000 a year as a firefighter and a nurse or whatever, as a professor and something else. I mean, we're talking about people who make billions of dollars feeding at the public trough.
Yeah, well, that is what we're talking about. It's deeply unfair. That's the biggest problem with this. And how, you know, we are a social species. We like things to be fair. So if we see that the rich, the elites, team elite is busy running a magic money printer and handing it to themselves, right?
Yeah.
Then everybody else is sort of like, well, but for you, you're kind of on the hook. If you have a 401k loss, you better figure out how to make that up. If you can't figure out how to make your mortgage payment, geez, that's tough. I hope you have a bridge all scoped out that somebody else doesn't already have scoped out for their family. It's very Darwinistic below a certain level. Above another level, laws don't apply, rules don't apply. What is the Fed doing? The Fed isn't just bailing out because of COVID. That's a BS story. Their bailout started, you know, back in the mid-90s, and they've persisted all the way through. And here's the number one thing the Fed exists to do: to take speculators who are leveraged up, well-connected insiders, and prevent them from taking any losses. So in September 2019, there's these funny plumbing in the system starting to break. The repo rates are starting to break. It looks like, oh no, there's some problem. The Fed won't admit what it is. We now know what it was. There were a few very well-connected insider firms like Citadel were engaging in a thing called basis trades, where they were speculating on the difference between the futures price and the cash price for treasuries, U.S. treasuries. They minted money for decades off of that stupid thing. Just in there, by the way, if you can make money for free, it's not investing, it's not trading, it's risk-free. So that's what they were doing. But all of a sudden, the risk actually returned. It looked like they were going to face some losses, and that would be normal. And the Fed said, nope, not on our watch. And of course, pay no attention to the fact that the former Fed chair, Ben Bernanke, is a chief advisor to Citadel right now. That's little revolving door.
I did not know this. This is good scoop information. What happened in the blow up? I mean, they put $500 billion on their balance sheet, the Fed, in September to the end of the year. They $500 billion, which is chicken feed now. They doubled their balance sheet, but still, they spent a lot of money.
huge amounts. And of course, that bleeds into everything when they throw that much money out into the marketplace. And I see all these people, Fed apologists, just awful, saying, oh, the Fed isn't trying to make, you know, financial asset prices go up. And of course they are. That's the one thing that they do. But they only step in when it's clear that the big banks, the large speculators, the elites, the Wall Street firms are about to actually lose money. Somehow it got enshrined as Fed policy over the past couple of decades that that Wall Street firms should only ever make money, never lose money. Now, you or I, the Fed doesn't care. You can lose all the money in the world and they're happy with that. But when it comes to Wall Street losing money, the Fed picks winners. They've chosen that big firms on Wall Street should never experience any losses. Well, that's maddening. It's angering. So when people say, oh my gosh, George Floyd got killed, Chris, now we have all these protests, I'm like, time out. That was just the spark that landed on a very large pile of tinder that included, yes, there's racial injustice and there's a lot of friction around that. But look at the student loan racket that's been going on. Look at the healthcare or the sick care racket, as I call it. Like, hospitals think nothing of completely bankrupting you at your moment of most critical need, right? We have a rapacious healthcare system entirely. We've got just everywhere you look, people are being taken advantage of. And so that's the tinder. And then the sparks are things like George Floyd. That's a spark. But I actually think, Greg, the real spark for people really ought to be Goldman Sachs earnings this last quarter. By the way, I had to put quotes, air quotes, around earnings, because when I earn money, I have to work for it. Goldman Sachs didn't earn that money. They just executed some trades for the Fed. They front ran those trades so they could get some extra basis points out of it. And the Fed basically just handed them billions and billions and billions of dollars for doing absolutely no service to society. Not one bridge got built. Not one business was saved. Not one person has a better improved quality of life beyond the Goldman Sachs employees because of that service they performed for the Federal Reserve. It's disgusting. And that's leading to the reason I care. People, you know, why do I care, Greg? Listen, can I let it go that some bankers make obscene profits? Sure. But I think this is ruining our society. This is the kind of thing that I believe led Plutarch way back a couple thousand years ago to say the oldest and most fatal ailment of all republics is a gap between the rich and the poor. Well, the Federal Reserve is busy enshrining and ensuring that we have the largest, most steepest wealth pyramid we've ever seen. They're a racist organization, if you look at it that way, if you care about this whole movement that's afoot right now, we're trying to seek racial more equality. Well, the Federal Reserve is busy funneling money to just a very, very few elite households, which happen to be overwhelmingly not people of color, right? Or however you want to look at this. But I just look at it as the Federal Reserve is creating the conditions that lead to a future that I don't want to go towards. I don't want to live in a place where mobs rule and people are unhappy and riots are happening and small and medium-sized enterprises are crushed by this stuff. This is what the Fed is doing. This is what people need to understand. If you think what happened to George Floyd was bad, you're going to really hate what the Federal Reserve is up to, because they are the entity most responsible for most of the pain that we see going on around us. And by the way, I wrote the article, Brace for Impact, which people can find at peakprosperity.com/brace. I wrote that because this trend I see happening right now is accelerating. It's not slowing down. There are no signs that Team Elite is going to say, we've taken enough, you know, an unfair, you know, $30 billion in Wall Street earnings this quarter is plenty. Let's start reversing any of that. No, Greg, they're going to keep doing what they do, and they won't stop until something breaks. And that's what I think people need to brace for.
You know, what we did away with the Graham-Bliley-Leach Act, which basically effectively took away, you know, the Glass-Steagall Act, which separated investment banks from commercial banks, right? And so what we effectively did was we built too big to fail. You know, people, how do you fix capitalism? Bring back bankruptcy. If when people like Warren Buffett, that little incompetent fool idiot that required a government bailout and still getting one in 2020, when they don't have to take losses and go bankrupt, then that's a problem. Bring back bankruptcy. Why do we feel like rich people can never go bankrupt? I don't get that. I can. You can. Plenty of other people can.
Yep. No, Greg, people say, oh my gosh, you know, if certain people get elected, we might get socialism. Like, we already have socialism.
For the few.
Right? We have socialism for the rich, right?
For the very rich. The 0.0001.
And we've had this for a decade or more now. Remember, I think you and I were talking about this back in, I'll pick a number, 2012 or something, where you'd noted things like, oh, JP Morgan's proprietary trading desk was reporting that they had 0 days with losses, right? That's not trading. Trading involves risk. Capitalism involves risk. That is fundamentally the heart of capitalism. Capitalism is, you know, you accumulate capital, you put it at risk, and you try and dare new things and you create new things, right? That's part of it. When you have 0 days of losses, that means by definition, there's zero risk. That ain't capitalism. It isn't trading, right? And that's the system we have where somehow that got enshrined as official policy that Wall Street should experience outsized returns, no risk, and never any losses, right? And that's what the Federal Reserve is defending. And that's what we really need to have a conversation about. That's what our congressmen ought to be on about. That's what our senators ought to be on about. But they always ask these stupid questions when they have their Humphrey Hawkins, you know, you get the Fed officials up. They're like, well, Jerome Powell, how amazing is the Fed doing this lately? Are they doing super amazing or double super amazing? You know, just stupid fluff stuff. When the reality is, the Federal Reserve is crushing everybody under the 0.1% class, and that's not a direction I think we should go without a pretty robust conversation, right? And it's a mystery to me why we can't have that conversation except in places like your channel and on mine.
So how bad do you think this is gonna be? I had a friend of mine call me and says, you know, I was looking into one of these, bulletproof vests. He said, do you realize that it's 6 weeks to deliver one? Mm-hmm. It's, excuse me? 6 weeks? The same guy says, I also was looking at these shields. You know, they'll stop a big, heavy round. Yes. He says, one company said, we had 62 orders in, this is just for people. This is just for regular people to hold up in front of. We had 62 orders in 5 hours for a shield that'll stop a 223. Okay. I mean, you know, it's 25 inches long or something like that. He says, I said, you're kidding me. He says, no, 90 days, at least. We don't even know when we can deliver it. That's what people are doing. People are freaking. They don't exactly know why it's breaking. You laid it out with the Federal Reserve and nobody can go under, or they've seen profits. And you're a smart guy. But people just know at the grassroots level, they know something's wrong, right?
That's right. People know things are wrong, and that's perfectly okay. Listen, whether you came to this because you studied, you know, the Federal Reserve workings in detail, or you just have a feeling in your gut that something's wrong, you're right, right? So I applaud any direction people get to it at. And by the way, a year ago, I wrote an article that's looking pretty prescient. It was about how I thought there was going to be one of the largest back to the land movements in history, bigger than the 1870 Oklahoma land rush, bigger than the hippies, you know, in the 60s. And it was going to really be rooted in the idea that people were going to discover that cities were not places they wanted to live, and that when, not if, but when our monetary system really started to break because team elite can't think of anything else to do besides print more money, you know, it's like, what else are we going to do? Take losses, right? So with that, people will suddenly realize what real value is. And I've been preaching this at Peak Prosperity for, gosh, I guess 12 years now. Hard assets, that's your actual salvation. I can't do anything about Fed printing, but I can avoid some of what's going to happen because I don't keep my money in Federal Reserve notes, right? I keep it in gold, I keep it in silver, I have it in land, I have it in food production. So anyway, my prediction was, hey, we're going to see this back to the land movement. And I wanted people to understand that if you wanted to buy a place out in the country, like have your place in the city, but maybe have one in the country too, you wanted to get on that early, right? And that's what I fundamentally try and do is get people aware of these trends before they get started. I didn't know COVID was coming along, but it came along and just put steroids on that particular piece of thinking. And now I've got all these anecdotes from people I know in Vermont, Massachusetts, I live in New England. So all around me who are saying, wow, every house is being snapped up. There isn't any land. People are you know, had their summer place, but now they're insulating it because they used to just come up for the summer from Boston, but now they think they want to stay here. You know, all this stuff is happening. So we're already seeing that flight from the cities. And that's just involving a fraction of a percent of the people, Greg. And I'm convinced that when you even got that to say 1% of the people said, I'd like to go out, not in, then we're going to see that, you know, basically it's going to be very, very difficult to find that place in the country you always wanted without going really far out into the countryside. So we've been watching that unfold for a while. I think that trend has just started and it's going to continue for a long time because people are going to default to, control. I would like to control my future a little bit. I want to make sure that my stored wealth doesn't go to zero. Great, that's where gold and silver come in. I would like to know where some of my food comes. Not all of it, but just a little bit. Great, that's where having some land and doing a little gardening comes in. I would like to know who my neighbors are so that I'm not surrounded by strangers who might form a mob against me. Great, that's where building your social capital in a more less densely populated area comes in. So all these things we've been talking about at Peak Prosperity for 12 years now are now in play. And that's really why I wrote that Brace for Impact article, was to sort of lay out that larger architecture so people could see it. But I don't care about people having information, Greg, if they don't take action on it. So that's what I really want. I want people to think about how they're going to protect themselves, their loved ones, work with their neighbors more closely. And basically, I think we have to return to it's not sort of make America great again, but we have to return to some founding principles that I think were important to making this country great as well as every other country. And that's rooted in this idea of integrity. There has to be integrity in this, that I care about you and you care about me on some fundamental level. It's not all greedy, me, 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 right? Which is what Wall Street, what the Federal Reserve is all about. It's just grotesque, money-grabbing greed, right? And people are hungry, I think, for this idea of control and integrity and knowing what's going on and getting a little bit of certainty back, because if you follow what the power structures, DC, Federal Reserve, blah, 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 all those guys are up to, they're creating a lot of uncertainty except around this one point. They're pretty much going to screw things up for most everybody while they grab what they can for themselves.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why people are getting defensive gear, bulletproof vests. I'm sure a lot of people are getting ammunition and guns. I don't know. I was surprised when my friend called me. I said, "Do you know that?" Because he wants defensive stuff, right? And so, but anyway, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk to you about your COVID routine every day, almost every day on Peak Prosperity, and now your YouTube channel. You're a PhD. I want to say epidemiology. Did I get that right?
Pathology.
What is it?
Pathology.
Pathology. Okay, pathology. Up close. I mean, you're an expert in infectious disease and microorganisms that can kill you or make you sick. Correct?
Correct.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Good. All right. I got that right. But you get your YouTube channel has blown up. You told me in the pre-interview they don't. You have 100,000, 200,000 plus views on your videos. They don't pay you much, if anything at all. They restrict your payment, and yet you keep pumping this stuff out. Which would probably make a good case for people to go over to peakprosperity.com and maybe you might think about, you know, joining up, because you've got a lot of great content over there, a lot of great content. So, but let's talk about the COVID thing. Are the numbers real? I mean, I see reports every day. Like, for example, we had a doctor saying that they counted a motorcycle accident as a death. Now the White House is sending all the hospital information to Health and Human Services and not to CDC. To your point, nobody trusts the CDC anymore. What's going on with the COVID? Is this real? Are we going to get another shutdown? Are they trying to kill the economy? What's going on, Chris Martinson?
Well, the first thing to understand is that all the statistics are just horrible at this point in time. So I'm not trusting any of them. The only one I kind of trust is all aggregated all the way at the top is called excess deaths. And we don't know why people died, but you can just count dead people, right? And so those, and you can compare those against a five-year trend line and say, do we have more or less? And by the way, COVID is going to both be contributing positively to excess deaths and also helping to contribute it negatively, because part of our excess deaths would be all the billions of miles people travel to and from work. So we're getting car accidents and they die. And so those aren't happening, right? So it turns out staying home is actually safer for people. You know, they're not getting drunk and falling off the subway platform or whatever they're doing, right? So COVID is contributing both directions. And so when you look at that, you say on balance, you know, where is this thing? And it turns out there's a bunch of excess deaths in the system. So I trust that number. Underneath that, there's reasons for hospitals to be incentivized to declare people as COVID. There's a monetary payment around that. There's reasons some places would like to underreport. And here's the thing. Even if you get a vaccine, right, what ultimately happens is the vaccine works with your body to tune your body up so that your body ends up fighting this thing off. Nobody gets better from COVID. Nobody fights off SARS-CoV-2 because of some magic pill. It's because the magic pill allowed your body enough time and resources to do what it does anyway. Our bodies are fighting off disease all the time. So yes, let's hope for a big track which says, yeah, we're going to find a great vaccine. Let's hope for that. At the same time, the second track is we should be tuning up everybody's bodies. In the French, they called it the terrain of your body, right? You want your own body to be as healthy as it can be from an immunological standpoint. And I keep putting this at the back end of every one of my YouTube programs. I'm like, here are the supplements that everybody needs that most of us are short on. There's vast amounts of science. You want the science? I'll give you all the papers you want that show that vitamin D levels are highly correlated with COVID severity. So if you have no vitamin D in your body, you're going to have a much worse time trying to fight off COVID. Very simple. We've known about this. Why aren't we collecting the vitamin D levels on every single patient who goes in so we can figure this out? Why isn't the CDC out saying, listen, we're all about making sure we get the best, you know, with the FDA that we get the best vaccine we can. But in the meantime, and as well as getting that, everybody should be on vitamin D. You know, here's what you should be taking. That just to give one example, right? There's lots of things we could be doing about that to help people's bodies, their own terrain, be more well prepared for anything that they might come across, whether it's a bacteria, whether it's the common cold, whether it's influenza, whether it's COVID, doesn't matter, right? We don't have that. Like, that's completely missing. It's all about the what's the next big expensive pharma thing we can help promote and support, right? And once you sort of unravel that, you understand that the CDC is not there to promote health and the FDA isn't there to promote health. They're there to help promote the next big thing from, you know, the next big expensive treatment. That's where you realize, you know, you can't trust them to have your best interest in heart. Yeah, getting the next big fancy vaccine might be a great thing. It will be. But you know what's even more important than that to our daily lives is making sure that we're healthy and that our terrain is as well adapted as it can be for any disease that we might be facing. And that would have enormous public health benefits. It would be an amazing thing. Why is it up to people like myself to sort of ferret all that out and start bringing it to people? Not my job. And by the way, as you mentioned, I'm not even getting paid for this. You know, Google demonetized all of my work right away because I was, and by the way, I don't speculate. I'm like, here's the data that would support this come from a lab. Here's the data that supports vitamin D. Here's the data that supports hydroxychloroquine. I'm just presenting data, but that was deemed enough of a threat to whatever business models are running out there that I was demonetized.
I want you to shut up. Are we going to get opened back up? Are they going to have this cheat by mail? Is that what they're pushing for? I mean, politically, I guess I'm asking you as a scientist to comment on something politically. But if we are we in any kind of an arc that we're going to get this thing beaten by the November election, or is it going to get worse from now until the November election, the COVID crisis?
Honestly, I think it's probably going to get better in a kind of all on its own, because if you look at the curves for almost every country out there, you see there's this big explosion in cases and then it just goes down. And it didn't really matter if it was Sweden doing it with their open, you know, policies. It didn't really matter if it was Belgium with their very different policies, or if it was China, or if it was, you know, it seems to follow the same course, which is you have a big explosion in cases and then it starts to die off. And I think that's at least in part because this thing spreads much more rapidly than we suspect. I think a lot more people are exposed to it than we know. I think a lot of people are exposed to it and their terrain is already pre-prepared and they would never test positive because they just get it and it clears out right away. That's got to be part of this. So to me, there's a huge number of cases that are happening that we don't know anything about. For some reason, there's a small number of people who really get spanked by this thing. And so those are the ones who I think are mostly showing up, obviously, at the hospitals, but also on the positive test, things like that. So my best guess at this point is that we're going to see big spikes in all the states that hadn't had their big spikes. You kind of have to have your spike. And then I would be surprised if it isn't true that we just see this thing start to tail off on its own because it's already ripped through the population.
Between now and the end of the year. So things get better and not worse.
That's how I'm seeing it at this point in time. That said, yeah. I still don't want to get it. I don't want it.
I totally agree with you. What do you do for peakprosperity.com? How do you become a subscriber? What do you get if you subscribe? Let's talk about peakprosperity.com because you've been so gracious to come on here. Obviously, you have tons of good information. This is just one, you know, 40-minute interview, and you got millions of words and information and data and all kinds of stuff on Peak Prosperity. How do you subscribe? What do you get when you subscribe?
Great questions. Thanks for the opportunity. So at peakprosperity.com, we've been running for about 12 years right now, and we have a really beautiful community of people there who are curious, intelligent, and we like to let the data lead us where it's going to go as long as it leads to action. So our belief system is that there's huge changes underway. A lot of that, some of them are monetary, so there's an economic discussion. Some of them are because of energy, whole separate discussion. Some of them because of the environment or ecological that are coming. And so when we put those three E's together, it becomes a framework for people who are ready to take action in their lives. And we build this, that's all problem definition. We've been doing a lot of problem definition here today. Our solution space, Greg, is all about how you build up eight different forms of capital. If I could skinny it down and condense them into three big forms of capital, it would be your physical, your financial, and your emotional or your healthy capital. So with that, that's what we get. And our subscribers go deep in this. We talk about all kinds of things behind the paywall that I can't really talk about in public for a lot of obvious reasons. We don't live in a very free and open country at this point in time in terms of ideas. So we have a much more wide-ranging conversation. But mostly people are asking, what should I do? How do I do it? We learn from each other, and I'm just really honored to be able to be the figurehead that has those conversations held at his site. Because, and you know, Adam Taggart and I, we've just assembled the greatest group of people, we think, who are very interested in figuring out what they can do for themselves and also to really help the larger story for everybody, for all of us. So that's what Peak Prosperity is. Come on by. Most of our information's free, and people can find that at peakprosperity.com. And if you want to join, lots of ways you can click buttons and find them, but it would be peakprosperity.com/enroll.
I'll put the enrollment on. And are there different levels of enrollment or just one?
Just one.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Okay. You know, I saw this headline saying, you know, it's a couple of people with a gas mask on, and it says, the preppers are now laughing their asses off. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I thought, you know, you'd get out of the country and maybe grow a garden. People are like, you don't have to do that. I mean, you don't have to. Now there's like, Oh, yeah, we got to do that. I mean, yeah. You know, yeah. And you've been way ahead of the curve. You and Adam Taggart have been way ahead of the curve, man. And, you know, there's, and I like the way you don't just do a financial look at it. You got the whole, you know, equity is a tractor, you know, actually is a garden. You know, equity is, I always say equity is a car title. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of things that you could have that is important. Anyway, Chris Martin said, I put up all the links for peakprosperity.com. Lots of free information there. Also your sign up page, peakprosperity.com. Chris Martinson, thanks for coming on and talking about what you do and giving us real information about the COVID thing. Thank you very much for joining us today on USAWatchdog.com.
Greg, always a pleasure. Thanks again.
All right.